We need to thank the community for the way they want to have my mother, the way they gave her time, and they spoke with her. The years that she lived here were most of the most pleasant for her, and we have to do it where people want to cover her in patience and love, and it's my duty to be a bar of the Democrat Society. Specifically also, for the wire arrangements, there were a few people, Rosenbaum, Reinhold, or Kreisel, who were very misastic, and to make it happen in a public way, that's part of the bracha. Israel had, it's both my best paid him, that's why my brother will not be master here, will be master next to Stroll, and just try to give a small sketch of her life. She lived about a century, and perhaps not one day in her life was easy for her. She was born in a very, very poor family. When she was 8, her mother passed away, and she had to mother her siblings. Instead of being hugged, kissed, and caressed, she had to worry for siblings. She then had a stepmother, and the same relationship wasn't easy. 14 children in the household, tremendous poverty. Very, very tumultuous, tufa kais, though. Things were falling apart. A lot of dissension, a lot of rebellion. She had a minimal education. She was a very bright person, but I don't think past third grade she had education. It wasn't possible, any type of education. And her childhood was a memory of struggles that she tried not to speak about. The war came, and she went through it in a labor camp. Somewhere in the beginning of the war, I didn't know all the details exactly, but she was run over by a trolley, and she had surgery on her head without anesthesia, and she did it. She took her strength and her ability to handle pain and many things was incredible. She had a desire to live. Him, and it kept her through conditions that no one else could have survived. At the camp that she was, she had a way of getting some extra food, and she made sure to distribute it. And there were people that she gave it to and kept them alive. After the war, she came to America. She was penniless. She obviously wanted to start a life, get married, and she worked very, very hard. And as a seamstress, that was her trade, that was her father's trade. And she saved every penny to be able to get a life. She had a friend who went to Israel. That friend had a child, I think, had asthma, and the medication in Israel wasn't right, wasn't good. And only in America, she was the medication, the right medication. My mother slashed her income and went every week to the drugstore to buy that medication and send it. When she wanted to do something, when she felt something had to be done, there was nothing that ever stood in her way. And it was throughout her life, the Mesiras Nefesh that she could do was incredible. She came from a world that was very, very different than my father's world. My father grew up around the yeshiva, around Slavotka. My father's scope and vision, understanding, was the understanding of the yeshiva world. And though my father was already in business in Europe, but his life and his entire culture was a culture yeshiva world. My mother grew up in a world that had no yeshivas. There were some Hasidim perhaps, but the youth was diehard communist and socialist. There was tremendous hatred and backlash. And she came to America, she was an attractive woman. She wasn't all that old. And she met my father. My father was 15 years at least her senior, and with a very, very different world. She didn't understand that world. But Chazal say that when Elisha came to the house, Shenanis, she told her husband, "I know that this person is the Ish Elokim, Ish Kodesh." And the Gemara says, "Mikan she'isha makeres ba'orchin leisim ish." A woman understands, yes, better than a man does. A man's mind works with data, analysis, processing. You need time, you need experiences, and you reach conclusions. A woman has an intuition. And when she saw my father, she said, "I don't understand it, but this is good, this is noble, this is right, and this is what I want to tie my life with." My mother's life, the hard life, and her very sharp intuition had made her a very suspicious and cynical person. But for her, suspicion and cynicism was not wielded as an axe to destroy. It was a scalpel that separated the fat from the meat. The people that seemed to the people that were. She once told me, she didn't speak much about, but once she told me that before she met my father, she met somebody with very prestigious lineage, well-to-do, many qualities that one would think you'd be eager for a girl with nothing from the camps to marry. She began to notice in him lapses of religiosity. It didn't bother her as such, but the discrepancy between what the person was projecting and what the person was bothered her. And she told him that somebody who is not what he pretends to be is not somebody you want. And my father, without understanding what yeshivas were, without understanding what slavotka was, she felt in him, this is the quality of a person of stature. And as different as they were, in age, temperament, from different worlds, she stood by his side with tremendous strength. And he cared for her and gave her a glimpse into a world, into a beautiful world that she had never seen. Through his stories, through his demeanor, through his actions. Her ability to give away everything was incredible. She worked very, very hard. There was a time when she didn't need to work so hard. My father's job as a shamus, bringing in whatever earning he put in. Their life was quite simple. But she wanted us to go to a camp. And a camp cost money. We went to a camp that was a very nice camp in Ruchnias, but my mother looked at the conditions and she wasn't very happy. And she took us immediately to a very expensive camp. And she went to work in a sweatshop all summer long. No air conditioning, 140 degrees inside the room, so that we should not have to live the way she lived. so that we would have something that they'd be able, that we would have the life and the things that she didn't have. She never spoke about it. It was natural normal. It was felt I did well in school, and it was felt I would benefit from having a chavrusa shop with a chasha person. I was a young boy, but I was looking, I think it was before my bar mitzvah. Yeah, it was definitely before my bar mitzvah. So twice a week, they paid somebody a chasha, altamira, mashuanka, spina bracha, to learn with me. So once he came to me, and on Motzei Shabbos, I would go there. So the one night a week that my mother had off, that everybody else went out, she would take me. We took two buses to get there. It took about 45 minutes now to get there. And went for an hour, and we went back. She didn't understand what we're learning. She didn't understand why learning. But she was my carer's origin. Somehow, and somewhere she knew that this is good. This is good for me. And therefore, she took the one night of the week that she had off. And then everyone else went out to have a good time. And she spent it to take me back and forth. The one quirk she had, she worked in a sweatshop. And it was, they made fancy coats. And the perk that they had was once a year, they could make a coat for themselves. So, you know, everybody chipped in his time and so on, the boss gave the material, everybody made a coat for themselves. Every year, my mother would find a Rebbetzin, a person that she felt was a woman of stature, and spent the whole year thinking about the coat to make for her and made it for her. What color would fit this person, what style would fit the person, how, and what. And that's year after year. Yes, she did make a coat for herself, but every other year, she made a coat for somebody that would never dream of wearing a coat like that. And this was the sum total of the perk that she had. And this is what she gave it for somebody that she felt was MS. As strongly and as harshly as she spoke of people that she felt were not Tohu Debara, were not, their projection and their essence were disparate, that's how strongly she was willing to give everything for a person that she felt was MS. She had nothing in the world except for my brother and myself, the older and the younger. At the age of 16, I graduated high school, and I decided I want to dedicate my life to Torah, Shifti Beis Hashem. It wasn't really what she had in mind. If for any reason, she was living fairly from hand to mouth, not lacking anything, but that was it. By all rights, I should do something that would be financially lucrative, and maybe I would have one to help her in her old age. The path I was taking wasn't going there. She also didn't understand quite, but she sensed that it's good. And she agreed. And she saw me off at this girl, supposedly for a year. And she knew she was letting go of me. I remember vividly, it's a scene almost 50 years ago. It was in 1970. It was 3-4 days for Rosh Hashanah. And she was sitting with me, JFK, seeing me off. Knowing that that's it. The 16 years which had some nachas, which had somebody, is gone. It's going. And 2 years later, my brother would follow without any issues at all. That scene stands in front of me. And I have a confession to make, Iman. I didn't understand what it meant to me. I couldn't understand what it meant you whispered when they announced that everybody should please go. The security and hype was if there's an attack, and the one people earlier. You whispered, Scanner site. And that was it. And you disappeared in the night. You came to visit me in Israel, first Shavuos, with the Abba. You didn't understand, but you saw Reb Nachum, and you said, this is the person I want to be the role model for my son. The Ish Makaris, the Ish Kaddish, the Ish Maila, somebody who really has nothing in this world, but a different world. You saw that, you intuited it, because that's the one gift Kashrut gave a woman that allows her to function in many societies and intuit what's good and what's not good. 3 years later, 4 years later, I got engaged. It wasn't possible to come to see my wife before. People didn't travel, and those are expensive. I got engaged without you being there. You sent your brachas. You came and you met your daughter-in-law. You were taken by her. You loved her and revered her for the rest of your life. Nothing could be good enough. My in-laws, my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, you said they are big people. And this is, I'm happy that this is the home you're in. Isha Makaris, there's no other way to explain it. And she spent the next 25 years, instead of her successful, financially successful son, sending her tickets to all sorts of exotic places, you sent packages, and please help us sit and learn. It's not that you didn't complain, it's you are happy with it. Because you sense that this is right, and this is good, and this is special. It's that sacrifice. It's that understanding. And there were other people who I tried to have some kesha with that you sense were not good people. Nor if anyone sensed it. And you went the whole mile to stop it. Way before anyone else understood. And I can't speak more about it. The tremendous strength and the Mesiras Nefesh. I don't know, Dashkafa, before I left back here, I came here after my father's burial. And someone said, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent you back for your mother so that she at least in her widowed age, she has somebody. Who knows Dr. Yashar? A few weeks ago, I was at the home visiting her. It had been a decline and so on. And she said something very, very eerie. I don't know what to make of it. She said, you know those who come to you? I sort of didn't say anything. I said, yeah, brother. You know, they were here. And they said, she's such a fine woman. She gave of her food in the camp as much as she could to other people. She sent medication to somebody. Why is she still there? Why don't we take her with us? And they said, because she's the only one here who covers her hair. And we need to leave her. If it's a projection of a mind, it says something about her. And if it's a projection to her mind, it says something about her. I don't know. That was her life. A life incredible hardship. A life of nothing easy. No one to help her, no one to comfort her. from the earliest memories, she was going to have to do and scramble and work. You know, we're going to JFK again. And this time, you're going on. At least, this time I'll be thinking of you. Maybe I've gotten old enough and smart enough. I know it's normal for a young person not to think of parents. I know, not kidding on myself. But I also understand that until one doesn't realize it, until one doesn't realize that the person whose shoulders you stand on, my mother was a thin, small person, and on her shoulders, everything stood. I know, I'll be thinking of you. And I think you'll still be thinking of me, of us, Rachel, myself, and the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren. You're coming and you'll be in the real situation. You know what every single one needs. Even when we didn't tell you, your senses were very, very sharp, and you picked up on each and every one's needs. And sometimes you'd let out, but you knew. But I would like to ask for one bakasha for each and every one of us separately and all together. Na, may alibis be worthy of your Messiah's nefesh. May what we accomplish and do and how we do it give merit to the century of selflessness, of not having anything for yourself and just for others. May that be our lot, and may it be your lot. And I think it will be not true up to you, not true up to Rachel, not true up to me.